by games gone real on this episode of Video Culture.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion. Two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills, there will be thrills, and there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And thanks for listening to Video Culture. I'm Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Essery.
And this week we have two great movies from the mid-80s whereby people, like bystanders, get caught up in real spy, like spy stuff, like espionage, like real stuff,
yeah.
And not just games.
Basically, we have two people who love to play spy games who are suddenly sucked into real espionage stories.
Right. And there's some pretty good story. I mean, I like both the movies. The first movie that we have, excuse me, is a movie called Cloak and Dagger from 1984. Now, a lot of people our age probably remember this movie and remember this movie fondly because it has the same actor from E.T. as the main character.
Young Henry Thomas.
Henry Thomas. And he has caught up because he has witnessed a murder whereby the murder, he's given, like, this videotape. I mean, he sees the dying person that got murdered.
Yes. Well, we should...
Not a videotape.
Well, we should clarify that they call it a tape throughout the movie, but it's actually an Atari 2600 cartridge.
It's not a 2600. It's an Atari 5200, I think.
Is it 5200?
Yeah, it's not the 2600. It was the 5200.
Well, forgive my faux pas, ladies and gentlemen,
okay.
Out there in podcast
right.
land. But let's go back a step in this film.
So,
Yeah, Henry Thomas is a big fan of spy games. When we first see him, he is actually playing a role-playing game where he's pretending to be, where he's role-playing as a character called Jack Black, who is like a James Bond type character, not played by the actual Jack Black, of course, because this was 1984.
Right.
But this role-playing game is visualized as an action sequence, like a James Bond type action sequence, a little bit tongue-in-cheek. But the main actor who plays the spy, Jack Black, is 9to5's Dabney Coleman.
And in the play, there's always kind of pretend play where Henry's character is always kind of pretending that there's spy or espionage or like this really kind of James Bondy type stuff going on with Jack Black,
yeah.
And that he's pretending that it's real because he's like in the movie. I mean, he's like supposed to be like what, about 11, 12 years old?
Yeah,
something like
he's
that.
probably about 11, maybe 10.
Yeah.
What that I found really interesting that I did not remember from watching it. We'll get more into the plot in a minute. But they kind of imply that he has emotional problems. Because his father knows he sees this Jack Black, this spy character, in his everyday life. And he talks to him like an imaginary friend. It's like a Calvin and Hobbes scenario where he'll communicate with this super spy, again, played by Dabney Coleman. And they basically have conversations with each other. Like Jack Black gives him advice on how to handle things. Like, it's this coping mechanism.
But Jack Black is, like, just a character in these, kind of cloak and dagger sort of, fantasy, games or whatnot.
These kind of James Bond, like role-playing games.
But his imaginary Jack Black is his, looks like his dad, which is Dabney Coleman.
Yes, Dabney Coleman also plays Henry Thomas's dad. So, like, when he visualizes this hero, he sort of superimposes his father onto this character. But let's go back to the beginning. So the movie kind of opens with this, like, James Bond-esque sequence, and you think it's kind of like a James Bond parody at first, until there's a moment where Jack Black is cornered, and you think he's gonna get hurt or defeated, and two giant 12-sided dice roll into him. Like, it looks almost like the boulder scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark, but they're two giant multicolored 12-sided die. And then they cut to Henry Thomas in a game store playing this little cloak and dagger role-playing game with his little friend, and like the game store owners there kind of watching them. It's a pretty clever way to open the movie.
Yeah, Henry Thomas's character's name is Davy Osborne. Dabney Coleman is Hal Osborne. But most of the main, you kind of follow the character of Davy.
Yes.
Throughout this whole thing. And so, yes, he's kind of sent on this, the video game clerk. Mm-hmm. Kind of sends him on a mission like, hey, go take this over to the video game people.
Yeah, I need some instruction booklets or catalog or something.
Yeah, just something really generic.
Oh, yeah, and buy me some Twinkies, because all guys back then were, you know, all guys were into video games and role-playing games were fat guys back then. And he's also, like, the game store owner is your typical, like, nerd. He's, like, got Coke bottle glasses and a beard. He's wearing, like, a Hawaiian shirt. And that character is played by the great character actor William Forsythe from Raising Arizona and Stone Cold, but he's billed as Bill Forsythe. But right. Yeah, I think this is one of his first big roles.
Yeah, and he kind of befriends, you know, Davy and the other little girl that he kind of plays with, and yeah, sends him on this, like, innocent mission over there, and in the process, witnesses, just through the mirrors, a murder, yeah. Of the stairwell, and then the dying person... you know, who works for this video game company, hands him this cloak and dagger video game, yes. Gives him an odd number, and then just dies.
Yeah.
Then the other goons, like, run after him. And then from then on, this whole MacGuffin of the movie is about getting this video game back.
Yeah, so basically Henry Thomas ends up with this video game. He gets from the dying video game maker. He doesn't know what it is. He takes it back to the game store clerk. The game store clerk opens it up. He's like, oh, it's got a weird microchip in it. I wonder what this is. Well, I'm going to go ahead and jump ahead in the plot a little bit. It becomes a chase movie. Okay. You know, it becomes a chase film where they're chasing the thing. But the MacGuffin actually is there are plans for a stealth bomber hidden inside the video game, and you don't get to them until you reach a certain high score. So apparently there's some spies smuggling out government secrets through video game cartridges for the Atari 5200.
Right.
Which seems like a really pretty clever way to do it. I got to point out an odd thing. Throughout the movie, they constantly refer to it as a cloak and dagger tape. They use the phrase cartridge once in the entire movie. It threw me off when they said, here's this cloak and dagger tape. They're holding up an Atari cartridge.
Wow. Well,
even
when he's in the airport and, like, Kang saying, or does he just say the old people have my game?
Yeah, he goes, they have my game. But literally every time they mention the cloak and dagger game, except for once, they say the cloak and dagger tape.
Right.
And man, that is weird to hear in 2018.
Yeah.
So the
whole place, the whole movie kind of takes place in San Antonio.
Yes.
Part of they use the Alamo at one point as a scene, as a setting, because what Davy is trying to do is Davy's trying to, like, mix in with as these goons are chasing him, he's trying to mix in with the tourists who are there, so that, like, he's seen in public, and it would seem weird for somebody to just forcefully grab, like, a 10-year-old, you know, in the middle of public.
And basically he gets this idea from his imaginary friend Jack Black, played by Dabney Coleman. Basically, Dabney Coleman as this Jack Black super spy imaginary friend basically gives him, like, spy instructions for how to handle this stuff. And some of this stuff is really clever on how to handle it. So it makes you wonder, like, is this kid really smart, or if there is something more going on? It's a little bit of a mystical angle too. Like, it's a little bit magical.
Well, I think it's just kind of him going, you know, what would Jack Black do in this situation or whatever.
But it's just a little ambiguous, just a little bit.
You know? And it is kind of weird to go back and forth between, like, what is real and what is not real. Yeah. And how Dabney Coleman just kind of appears as this apparition that nobody else can see but Davy, you know? So.
And at times they really want you to question whether he's actually there or not, but then they start giving it away more and more as the movie goes on that he's just, you know, Davy's imagination.
Right.
At one point, Davy has to steal a car. And he asks, you know, Jack Black, how do I drive? He's like, I don't know, Davy. This is a real car.
Yeah.
You know? Because right. why would the kid know how to drive?
Right. And why would he know and give him instructions on what
yes.
to do? Yes.
Yeah. So in that way, it's surprisingly clever. It is a little hokey in places. Yeah. But it's fun to see Dabney Coleman, who is not an action hero, kind of playing this character. I mean, he's wearing like a cool like spy pleather jacket that's all very crisp looking, and he's wearing like a beret. He looks like a live action G.I. Joe. It's pretty funny to see.
Right, but the whole I just thought to me that a lot of the middle like bulk part of the movie
mm-hmm.
is like Davey sort of. You know, running, like, trying to get away from these people, trying to thwart their plan, or they're trying to steal something. And it's almost like a chase in slow motion, because it's happening in front of, like, a lot of public people or
yes,
whatever.
Yes.
And it's very sort of tricky, and it's very sort of like watching a sort of chess match, and what are they going to do? And it's really kind of slow and doesn't really have, like, a set sort of pace.
Yeah, it's not very propulsive is the word I think you're thinking of. It's not very rapid.
No.
But I think in a way it makes up for it by being, you know, very of its time. Like, that kid's in a lot of danger throughout the movie. Like, I mean, they're literally shooting at him.
Yeah.
They're trying to kill him. They end up killing the Gamester owner.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that was a real death.
Yeah, and Davey finds his body, you know?
Well, and he even gets tricked by Jack Black of, like, shooting the other guy, like, in the leg or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
Davey ends up using Jack Black's, you know, imaginary advice to basically have the thugs shoot each other.
Right.
And then at the end, he actually grabs one of the guns, ends up shooting one of the bad guys. So you have basically a 10-year-old kid shooting someone with a gun. And that's meant to be kind of a triumphant moment for him, because he basically gets to thwart the bad guy.
Well, that was the thing that was kind of weird for me, too. It wasn't like quite near the end, because he's just trying to get away from the goons chasing him. But like Jack Black appears, and it's almost like he distracted the guy that was pointing the gun at Davey.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the guy could see him.
Well, I think what it is, I kind of thought that too when I watched that scene. There's a scene where the guy's got this machine gun pointed at the kid.
Right.
And Davey's got the gun. He got off the other bad guy. And so at that point in David's imagination, he sees Jack Black trying to distract the guy with the machine gun. And he's like, "No, Jack, this guy will hurt you. He's got a machine gun." So he shouts like, "No, Jack, no." And I think what it was... the kid shouting made the guy with the machine gun think someone was there. So he was jumpy, turned and just shot at the wall out of being jumpy.
Oh,
and the
I
kid
see.
Just put Jack Black in that scenario.
And that's how he shot Jack Black. And then from that point on, you don't see Jack Black anymore in the movie.
Well,
I mean, it's like he's dead, you know, kind of there. Because really, and I remember like reading reviews and stuff like that, it talks about how it's like you're leaving childhood and you're leaving your innocence of your childhood and becoming like sort of an adult.
And right? that's the metaphor, yeah. Right. And he talks about, as Jack Black is dying, he talks about how eventually everyone outgrows him. He goes, "Your father outgrew me once. He didn't want to play cowboys and Indians anymore."
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of see that cyclical nature of imaginary friends and leaving that behind and becoming a bit older. So that had some surprising nuance I was not expecting, or I didn't remember as a kid.
Yeah, I mean, it was very sort of heartfelt. I mean, it had this very sort of like, you know, like Toy Story 3, you know, type of vibe, you know, where you're like leaving your childhood behind kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, and there's one thing I really liked about it, and we're going to talk about spoilers. This is, I mean, we always recommend if you should watch the movies that we're talking about, of course.
Yeah,
but they're some of them are nearly 30 years old or older, so you've had time.
We can't pretend these are new movies.
Yeah, exactly. So you should have seen them by now. Right. If not, watch them. They're interesting.
Yeah.
But you find out, like, you hear about that these guys are getting these plans for some spies, and the only thing we know about the spies is that one of them has only three fingers on one of their hands. So you're assuming it's going to be like this burly, like Russian-looking guy, or like something that's very much stereotype. Well, earlier in the film, Davey gets saved by an older couple who sees him being stalked by these thugs, and this older couple provides him cover. It's like a grandmother and a grandfather. They basically save him,
right?
And later on, they save him again, and Davey's got the cartridge. He's feeling very good about himself, And the grandmother's like, well, let me see what you got there, son. And as she's doing that, she pulls off the gloves on her hands, and you realize she's only got three fingers. And you discover that she is, or they are, the spies who wanted the plans in the first place.
Right, and they're headed towards the airport or whatever.
And it's actually a pretty ominous reveal when you realize that they're actually the bad guys, and they've been the bad guys the entire time.
Yeah, because he's riding in the car with them. He's trusted him. He's told them everything he knows.
And he's actually trapped him. It's a nice bit of tension because he's trapped in them. He's actually riding between them.
Right.
So he can't even get away.
So weird.
And that way, it's pretty clever. Mm-hmm. But you're right. The pacing is a little slow.
Well, and how it's confusing, how you have this like sort of double cross and this shooting, whether he's real or not or whatever. I mean, I just thought that these were, that's the sort of contentious points about the movie, right? It's just...
Well, really, my biggest problem with the movie, honestly, is the ending. And we're just going to go get in the ending. It's going to sound a little convoluted because we're going to have to speed through some dialogue.
Well, the ending is real simple. They get on the plane. Well, no, the old couple, they're ready to get on the plane. Davy says, no, they're my parents. You can't leave.
Because they've got the tape.
Yeah. Because they're my parents. Why are they leaving without me? They're at the security checkpoint. Security guys know, wait, hold on. You can't leave. You know, this is your son? Is this your son? And they go, no, that's not our son. Davy goes, no, they have my game. It's in their bag. Yeah. And then sure enough, they inspect the bag, got the bag. So then they go, the bad grandma and granddad pull out a gun, say, well, we're taking this plane hostage.
Yes. But there's one
thing. Fly us out of here.
Well, there's one thing they had to do to add. You're right, the movie lacked a little bit of tension throughout. It's what they did at one point was when Davy's friend, this little girl who he plays role-playing games with, gets kidnapped by the thugs. And for them to give him an ultimatum, they actually plant a bomb on her that Davy knows about. And instead of walkie-talkies, that they use it to communicate with each other. So this little girl's got basically a C4 bomb on a timer in her walkie-talkie. And basically to give the last half of the movie sort of a ticking clock aspect.
Yeah.
So and I don't remember how it happens, but somehow the walkie-talkie with the bomb ends up in Davy's possession when he gets on the plane.
Right.
So he's on the plane with just the spies, the older couple, and this bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And his father, who's an Air Force pilot, basically pretends to be the pilot for the airline to try to get his son off the airline. And this bomb's going to go off at any minute.
Right.
So you've got his dad, played by Dabney Coleman. You got the two older spies, and you got this bomb. And his dad gets Davy away from the spies.
Mm-hmm.
The spies notice the bomb, and they're freaking out about how to disarm it. And basically, Davy's dad loads him pushes him out of the airplane window before the plane takes off.
Like the front window, too. Pilot window.
Yeah, that little tiny pilot window. He basically lowers Davy out of it. And the bomb's got like 30 seconds before it goes off. Mm-hmm. So Davy basically falls out of the plane, rolls away. And like 20 seconds later, huge boom. The plane goes up in smoke. Big like cinematic fireball. And then you see Dabney Coleman walking away from it like he's friggin' John McClane in Die Hard.
And it was so bad, like...
It's a blue screen shot. I get what they're going for, but there's no way he could have gotten out of that plane in the 10 seconds between when he dropped the kid out and when it went boom. And it's a kid's movie. I get that. But it was such a small window of time that even I was like, oh, man, that's some bull right there.
Right, but the whole point was to Dabney Coleman, who was actually – we keep calling him Dabney Coleman, but his real – you know, his real name is Hal or whatever his name is, Hal Osborne.
Yeah.
He becomes like, you know, Davy's like real superhero, like his real life superhero.
He finally realizes that his dad is a hero.
Right.
His dad saved him. His dad did something very brave. And so now he doesn't need Jack Black anymore. It's about growing up, realizing that there are real heroes in the world.
Right.
And, you know, yada, 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 happy ending. They should have called the movie Double Dabney, though.
Double Dabney. I know. Did he... Did he play... He didn't play a double role in 9 to 5.
I don't think so, no.
But he played kind of a... When he was drugged up, I guess, he acted different. But.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. But he was not Lily Tomlin or Dolly Parton or anything like that. But yeah, that is Cloak and Dagger. So honestly, what did you think of it?
I mean, I kind of like watching it. I remember watching it as a kid and being like, this is really, like, I remember loving it as a kid. Because one of the things that about the movie that as a kid, you could watch it and go, Davey is sitting here telling, he knows what's going on. He saw what is happening. You see in the movie that, like, what Davey is saying is the truth. And none of the adults are listening to him.
Yes.
They all just discount him completely, not listening to him. And you're just like, really, as a kid, you're just like really torn. And you're really going, you know, screaming and like fighting for Davey to like get away or for somebody to like listen to him or believe him. Because it's just like there are people like really after him that are really going to kill him or kill his friend or like whatever. And nobody believes him over this like video game. And they all don't believe that it's like this video game. But I mean, you see the video game. You see the video game reveal where the guy hits the high score and like, you know, so you know that that part is true. Like, they had to have
it. I'd like to say something, by the way. I don't know if Cloak & Dagger was a real Atari game. That game looked pretty sweet.
Well, I'll get to that in a minute. That's part of my, like, show notes at the end. But
okay, well, I don't mean to digress.
Right. It was a video game. And, yeah, I mean, they had obviously had a video game release in mind. Never got released because Atari, went bankrupt.
Sure.
But they did. The game that he's playing, like that you see, is from the actual like video game, the arcade game.
Well, I didn't mean to make you digress. You were saying that you're rooting for Davey to get away. You're rooting for people to believe him.
Yeah.
And as an adult, that tension's not really there. I don't think. I mean, it's not a very tense movie.
No.
But it's fairly clever for what it is.
I mean, it still had to be rated PG. They couldn't make it like super super. You know, dramatic or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, there's still some deaths, and you know, I liked it. I mean, it's not great, but I mean, I think it's worth seeing. It definitely held up better than some of the things we watched. Again, it's better than 18 Again. For those of you who've been listening to all our podcasts, that is really our low bar for terrible 80s movies.
I mean, but I mean, I didn't. Just watching it again and, like, watching things in slow motion and watching this kid. Like, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of, the guy that played Henry Thomas. I just thought his performance wasn't really something that really captured, kid. I thought it was, you know, just kind of sort of average. And, I mean, the scenery is kind of cool. And I remember talking to somebody about, like, San Antonio and, like, going down to that, like, river walk or whatever that they have and just going, it was not that nice. They make it look like it's, you know, like Italy or something like that. And it's really just kind of, it's really kind of grimy, you know?
Yeah, so. I didn't realize San Antonio had canals. That's what's, it really puzzled me. I'm like, where are they? I'm like, oh, wait, that's the Alamo. Like, right. I'm like, there's canals in San Antonio?
Like, did the Texas, like, tourism board, like, help pay for some of this movie and Atari help pay for some of this movie, you know? So, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of, I thought it could be a little bit better written and better have, like, better plot points and, I don't know.
I think the script is pretty good. I think the script is pretty good. I don't think it's executed that well. I think the directing and the acting lets it down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There's some, you mentioned, I saw something weird I wanted to mention. It's not really, you know, tied into anything, but the game store owner. He never actually seems to be running his store. Have you noticed? Did you notice that about the movie? Like, he's got this nice game store in this mall.
Right.
He's always in the back playing video games. Like he's got this entire really awesome game store, like classic D&D modules and like miniatures and like stacks of Atari games. And literally, all unattended. Like, if this was really the 80s and 1984, kids would have been that place would have been stripped bare in like an hour.
Oh, I know.
Kids have been shoplifting like crazy.
There was no even, like, security thing to, like, set off an alarm when he stole the game. You know, because at one point, he takes a Cloak and Dagger game and, like, tries to pass it off as the actual game that the guys were after. And
the way they notice it's not the game they were after, it's nothing that's weird. Maybe this was an 80s thing that I just don't remember. But they actually had the name of the game store stamped on the actual cartridge.
Yeah.
Like, they turned the cartridge over and like, oh, it's the name of the game store.
Yeah.
Like, so did William Forsythe open each Atari game and pull out a sticker and be like, this was from the gamekeep or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that seems like a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But either which way, I mean, it was kind of it was enjoyable. It was good to watch again. It was good to watch, you know, that whole movie again.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. It's like, maybe it's better to leave, you know, your kind of movies. But, you know, you have to remember that movie was as old as it was. I mean, we're talking like 1984. Mm-hmm. I would have been like almost exactly, well, I was probably, it was seven or eight. So, but I think I saw it like a few years after that. But yeah, I was still kind of like young.
Yeah, the first time I saw it, it was on HBO a lot when I was a kid. So that's when I first saw it, because I was born in 79.
Yeah, I was born in 76. So yeah, so we watched it, you know, kind of from a kid perspective. But yeah, I remember thinking how cool it was and how cool that like these video games could be involved in this kind of stuff. I mean, and this whole, I just thought the whole tie-in of childhood innocence or leaving childhood innocence could have been told kind of in like a little bit better way. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, like I said, I think the directing hurts it. I think some of the performances are weak. Like, the bad guys are not threatening at all.
Yeah.
Even in scenes where they should be threatening, like when they're storming his house to try to get to him, that should be like a nightmare scenario for a kid, and it's just not that threatening.
Yeah.
But I think, the ideas are there. Like, the thug's like sieging his house when his dad's gone.
Yeah.
And like, he's talking about how he doesn't want his dad to leave, go to work that day, because when you leave, they're going to come get me. Yeah. That should have been super tense. And it could have been super tense. It's just, it's not.
Yeah. And I just, I'll throw in one more thing before we switch gears. I thought the idea of Henry, where he said he was, you know, he was like the grandparents who were the bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, where he's in that scene in the airport security, and he says, you know, they're my parents.
Yeah.
He's sitting there, like, right before he says that, he's, like, asking Jack Black to, like, come back and tell him what to do. Tell him what to do. And he never comes, obviously, right? Because he's not done. But he himself came up with the idea of what he did and saying that, like, they're my parents.
Like, he's finally kind of empowered himself to be heroic without needing that imaginary character. And he's grown up a little bit. He's become more autonomous.
He's becoming, like, more brave. Because he always, like, whenever there was something where he got really scared, like, that's when Jack would show up.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll switch gears now. We'll go on to the next movie, which is a movie from the next year, from 1985. A very great college summer flick called Gotcha.
Yeah, both these were released by Universal Pictures, oddly enough.
Yeah, and it's comedy action film starring Anthony Edwards and Linda Florentino.
Fiorentino. That's
an I, not an L.
Yeah. Linda Fiorentino, who was in Dogma and Jade Men in Black 1. Right. Yes, Men in Black 1.
Men in Black 1. She is excellent. She's awesome in this movie. I'll just say that.
Yeah,
and she is by far like one of my favorite parts about this whole movie.
Yeah. She's definitely one of the stronger aspects of it.
Right. But this is a movie that introduced paintball to America.
In a lot of ways, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this was the first movie that even featured paintball. And so the idea stems from, the whole movie kind of stems from, Anthony Edwards is a UCLA, college student.
He's a freshman.
Him and like a whole bunch of people, like this club on campus.
Gotcha.
Play this game called Gotcha, where you basically hunt down the other people in the game and shoot them with paintball guns.
You're given like an assassination card.
Right.
And you're like, it has someone's picture on it and their name. And you basically have to find them with your paintball gun and shoot them. And this is a movie that could only exist. This is a thing that could only really exist in the 80s. Because you got kids running around a college campus with very realistic looking paintball guns.
Yeah.
And nowadays, it's so weird to go back and watch these things through a 21st century, 2018 prism. Because you see these kids running around with like pistols on a college campus, and no one's freaking out. Like, literally, they're like hiding the guns in their coats badly.
Yeah.
And people are just like, whatever, you know, who cares?
Yeah. I mean, he shot him with the guns almost look very real.
Yes. And people are just like, oh, you silly nerds in your paintball game.
Right. And we played actually a very sort of similar game in our office called Spoon Assassin.
Yeah, we play a similar game in our other corporate lives where we just tag each other with spoons, but it works the same way.
Yeah,
it's a fun game because you know. But in 2018, you can't run around with realistic like paintball guns in public. You will get shot by the police.
Right. But the movie, the actual like plot of the movie, doesn't really start until Anthony Edwards and his buddy go off on this summer European trip. They're going to go to Paris. They're going to go to Spain. They're going to go, you
just
know,
all around Europe to get laid because yeah. It was the 80s, and that's what teens did in the
80s. That's what their plan was, right? So, they're freshmen, they're virgins, and they want to get laid.
So morally weird. So morally weird.
It is. It does seem really dated in that way, and so I mean, it's not... There is some like sort of very sort of male chauvinist, like some sexism, you know.
Well, his buddy, who actually is not a virgin, to clarify, basically encourages him. Was like, when we go to Europe, Anthony Edwards. I almost called Anthony Michael Hall,
not Anthony Michael Hall, Anthony Edwards.
When we go to Europe, Anthony Edwards, you've got to lie. You can't be yourself. You've got to lie to women to have them want to have sex with you. And again, just morally weird.
Yeah, so Anthony Edwards plays a character named Jonathan Moore.
Jonathan Moore. They say his name constantly through the movie.
Yes, Jonathan. Yeah. Always Jonathan Moore. Jonathan Moore. They say his first name and last name quite a lot.
Yeah, quite a bit, yeah.
And then Linda Fiorentino is known as Sasha Banachek.
Sasha Banachek. Yeah, she uses this kind of Natasha Badenoff, Rocky and Bullwinkle European accent. Yeah. You know.
Well, his buddy abandons him in Paris for some girl who he thinks is Swedish.
And it turns out she's Swiss, and that doesn't work out for him because, again, morally weird.
But either which way, Anthony Edwards just goes off to a cafe and decides to drink up the local absinthe.
Absinthe? You mean atmosphere?
No, absinthe. That's what he's drinking. So what he, remember?
Is he drinking absinthe?
Yes. Yes.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, when he says whatever that he orders at the, what was it called? I can't remember what he said.
There was a cafe. There was some weird drink. The waiters, would you like water with it?
Yeah, and but that's what he was drinking. Huh. So anyway, but it wasn't real absinthe. It's just kind of like...
That's what they give the tourist, I suppose, right?
Well, no, I'll get into that in a minute.
Well,
we'll talk about that later.
Yes. Well, anyway, to get back to the kind of plot.
He was drinking up, and he was just drinking himself in sorrows, and this, like, older lady with, like, short brunette hair starts checking him out.
Yeah.
And he's like, what is going on? Like, this chick is, like, just checking me out.
Yeah, she's eyeballing me.
Yeah.
And she's Linda Fiorentino. You can Google Linda Fiorentino, especially at age, like, she can have been older than, like, 25. She's gorgeous in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, she's stunning.
Now, I can't remember. Does she come over to him?
She goes over to him. And she basically says that she likes young, I'm just going to get it crude and morally universal, she likes young virgins.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, he lies to her at first, but then when she says that, he goes, well, I am young, I am a virgin.
Yeah.
And it turns into a teen sex comedy and a little bit, like, there's not a lot of nudity.
No.
But they definitely immediately go in and sleep together, you know, and they have kind of like this little, like, you know, romance.
But she kind of courts him, though, like, you're going to be my boy toy, basically, you know, kind of thing. And she doesn't care. Like, she knows he's kind of younger, knows he's kind of inexperienced, and she's like... That's, like, what excites her. She's kind of being, like, a tiger, you know, because she's, like, you know...
She'd be a cougar.
She'd be a cougar. That's what I was looking for.
Now, there is a tiger in the movie. That's a nice segue to one of the weirder parts of it that we'll get into later.
I meant cougar. But she's really, like, in her mid-20s, you know. She's not really being that much of a cougar.
It's not that weird when you see them together. But it turns out she's some sort of spy.
Yeah.
She's some sort of courier.
Yeah, because she has a Czech accent. She says she's from Czechoslovakia. And then she says, I am courier.
Yeah.
So so they have to go over to, and this is the time in the mid-80s where there was East and West Berlin. You had East and West Germany. And, you know, he had, you know, what they call the DDR, right?
Yes. Another thing that would really confuse a young viewer now if you were to watch the movie. Berlin, for you kids out there who are younger than me and Ryan, Berlin used to be divided amongst, between the, you know, the free Berlin and still communist controlled Berlin.
Right. Yeah, because it was the GDR is the German Democratic Republic, but the DDR was the Deutsche Demokratische Republik, which is, you know, basically, so
yeah, basically
it's just the DDR. Is what they refer
the
to.
The DDR, which they say a lot, basically, yeah. It's just the communist control part of Berlin, basically. Yeah, and exactly. There's, again, for a quick history lesson for you kids who don't want to use Google, Berlin was basically divided down the middle by a giant wall.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the communists controlled one half of it. And so basically, Sasha tells Jonathan Moore that they need to go to the communist-controlled part of Berlin to pick up a package.
Right. And the other guy, he was supposed to leave to go to... they were supposed to leave to go to Spain.
Yeah.
And so she's like, well, why don't you come with me? And so he was kind of like, well, okay, you know. And so at the very last minute, he decides to... Well, he wasn't really going to, but at the last minute, he decided he was going to.
Yeah, because when you're young and you have a beautiful girl who wants you to do stuff, who's willing to sleep with you. I know you remember being young, and when you first fell in love, it happened to me too. You don't even think about it. You're like, I just want to be near this girl. I don't care what we're doing.
Right.
And, my first girl, I probably would have went to, communist Germany too. So,
yeah.
But he does it without even really hesitating, which is, yeah. which if you think about it realistically, is stupid. But if you think about being in that mindset of being young and being in love,
right.
Having your first experiences with a woman, it makes sense why he would just be like, okay, let's go do it because I just want to be near you.
Now, it wasn't just to let everybody know, it wasn't illegal for Americans to go to, to East Germany or to, but. You had to have a passport. It had to be, you usually could only stay for a certain amount of time. It's like 1 or 2 days. Like if you were visiting, you can only be there for like a week. Yeah. I mean, there was like all these rules and restrictions.
Yeah.
And there were certain things that you also could not buy and bring back.
Yeah. It was not safe.
No.
Let's put it that way. It was not safe to go there.
No. Because a lot of people, because you are, maybe tourists or wealthy, you were likely, because it is a communist country, you might get, robbed or whatever. It wasn't very likable. But people did go there because some people did still have family over there. They did go visit.
Sometimes it's just morbid curiosity.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So basically, they go to this communist control part of Berlin. She picks up her package, which is a roll of microfilm because it's a spy movie, basically.
Yeah.
And she gets identified by this Russian who works for the communists, who wants the footage. I don't think they ever say what the footage is.
No, that's part of the whole MacGuffin of the movie. At least in Gotcha, we got to know that, like, hey, it's this Blackbird SR-71. In this movie, we have no idea what the hell is on this freaking film.
Yeah, but it's just like a little... nothing is going to confuse kids in 2018 if they didn't grow up in this time period. But it's actually a can of actual, like, photo film.
Right.
So, again, something that doesn't even exist or have a purpose in today's day and age, much like an Atari cartridge,
Very little. I think there's more people who play vinyl records than shoot on film.
Yes, probably.
All right.
So, anyway, she gets identified by the Russian heavy, the bad guy of the movie. So, she basically... And she, I don't think she was intending to slip the thing to Anthony Edwards' character, Jonathan. But she ends up hiding the film in his backpack and tells him to get the hell out of Germany.
Yeah.
And so he does, and the bad guys chase him. Mm-hmm. They chase him all the way. But there's some foot chases through Germany. He goes all the way back to where he's from, Los Angeles. But let's go back to a fun thing. I don't want to skip over some of the weirder aspects of this movie.
Yeah.
There's some fun little weird things. As he's trying to escape from Germany, he gets help from a new wave rock band or like a punk rock band. When he's trying to get to the airport.
Well, kind of what happens is that they get split up. And she goes, yes. Well, if we get split up, you just go without me, basically.
Yes.
So he finally has to go, okay. And, like, he didn't find her, so he's like, he's going to go back.
Yes.
But then after that, he starts getting chased around by these people.
Yeah.
It is by his sort of, like, assassin sort of, like, ways that he figures out, like, somebody's freaking after me. I got to get the crap out of here. I think it was before he got out of the DDR that they were coming after him. And it was sort of his assassin game that he played, that he, gained all the skill at to use to get the crap out of there.
He noticed when someone was tailing him, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He knew how to, like, get around all that kind
so
of
stuff.
So
he gets back into to the Democratic part of Berlin. He finds out his hotel room had been robbed, so he loses all his money.
Right.
And he's got to get to the airport, and he's trying to get out. And he ends up stumbling across basically a German punk rock new wave band with like ridiculous hair and makeup. Again, something that's so very 80s and wonderful. I can't remember what, I don't remember what their name was. It was something about like Cool Cult was their name or something. Like that. It was spray painted on their van. And he's like, you guys have to help me. You know, I'm trying to get home to L.A. I'm being chased by Russian spies. And the rock band's just like, that's cool, man. You want to hang out with us? That sounds like a good time.
Yeah.
And basically he jumps into this van with like these like new wave of like hair metal punks with like ridiculous makeup and big like hair. And it's such a weird thing that only exists in like 80s movies. Again, it goes back to like when we talked about there was a movie we talked about a few weeks ago where we talked about how when I was a kid, I just assumed like every town had like, you know, makeup wearing like tall hair like punks in it.
Yeah. Oh like, yeah. Like, and almost every other 80s movie had some sort of crazy wild punk.
Yeah, it was just that was just a weird thing in 80s films that just didn't exist any other time period. Yeah. But it was always like I always assumed that there were like makeup wearing blue haired kids or adults really because I was a kid at the time. Adults just around the corner every like nightclub and ridiculous thing. It's such a weird random thing that like, pops up so frequently in 80s movies.
Right, and so they dress him up in the makeup too to kind of disguise him. Yeah. He gets back into the DDR. He goes to Hamburg, and then you know is able to fly back home. I guess.
Yes.
And I guess he must have called his parents or, you know, his rich parents, and they must have wired him some money or something like that.
And he gets home, and he thinks the Russians are following him, and his parents think he's crazy. His parents assume he's on drugs.
Right.
And he's like, and eventually he just gets frustrated, and he's like, no, I'm not on drugs. Just please believe me. And they just won't. He's like, fine, yes, I'm freebasing. I'm smoking crack.
Right.
I'm pouring cocaine on my cornflakes. That's actually probably one of the better lines in the movie. I'm pouring cocaine on my cornflakes.
There was a lot of funny lines in the movie, to be quite honest. Yeah. I mean, I really liked the sort of the humor that was in it. It was really sort of funny. But no, you just assume that, you know, here he was. He was supposed to go over to Spain. Dad didn't want him to go in the first place. And then he winds up going over to, like, East Germany into the DDR, and then like he gets in trouble, has to fly home. So they're like, what kind of trouble are you in? Like, are you on drugs? You know, and so he's assuming that everybody is chasing him, even the person, like he gets into a car and somebody's like just behind him, and he thinks that like he assumes there's a spy is following him and is really not.
So at this point, he finds the film and he realizes he has to get help, so he goes to the CIA office. To try to get he finds the local CIA office in Los Angeles to get help. And when he goes there, a spoiler alert, again, this movie came out in 1985. You should have seen it by now.
Just watch it.
Yeah, just watch it. Yeah, you read the description of the episode. You should have seen it. But he goes there, so spoiler alert, he sees who? Sasha, palling around with the CIA agents. Like, ha ha ha, isn't it great to be a spy?
Yeah, just hanging out with the other spy people or whatever. I mean, it's just like, it's really kind of weird. He sees this person who he saw the last time he saw her was like in East Germany or whatever, right? Yeah.
And the last time we saw her, she had a nude scene, which is odd because it was a PG-13 movie. And I was not expecting that, you know? But so, you know, I guess in the 80s, PG-13 meant different things, but I was not expecting to see, oh, wow, topless scene.
Just a little bit. Yeah, it was just like one boob.
We're very mature here in video culture.
Yeah, because it was, wasn't it during like the strip, it wasn't even during a love scene, it was like during the strip search.
Yeah, it's like they strip search her and like you see and a little bit of toplessness, and it's like wow, this is a PG-13 movie. I forgot they did that in PG-13 movies in the 80s.
Yeah.
That you could get away with that kind of stuff. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So last time we see her, she's basically caught by the bad guys. Next time you see her, she's palling around with the CIA. And so So there's some different random occurrences using his college buddy's gang affiliations. He separates Sasha, or her real name is Cheryl Brewster. He separates Cheryl Sasha from the CIA using his college roommate's gang connections. Again, because morally weird.
Yeah, he's like in the Spanish gang or something like that.
He's like, you were in a gang when you were a kid, right? and his Hispanic friend was like, of course I was in a gang. Because all Hispanic people are in gangs because it's the 80s and this movie's morally terrible.
Well, I mean, he does get to sort of like ask Sasha or Cheryl, like, what the heck is going on? Yeah. Like, what is this film? Like, what is this all about? What have you got me wrapped up in? And he gets to really confront her.
Yes.
You know, which is very good. He really gets some answers because he doesn't know,
yeah,
like, what the heck is going on. We know kind of what's going on because we saw what happened to Cheryl or to Sasha when she went to go visit with the East German people.
Yes. There. But again, I can't stress how weird it is that he basically assumes his friend's in a gang.
Right.
His friend's like, of course I'm in a gang. And he even says, when you're in a gang, you're always in a gang.
Yeah.
Even though I'm now a college student doing pretty okay for myself, I've still got a bunch of like you know, cholo buddies who are willing to ride heavy for me and help me kidnap someone for you.
Right.
But that's neither here nor there. It's just a weird 80s thing.
But just like the weird, just like the Cloak and Dagger movie, Anthony Edwards plays this character who gets involved in the spy espionage stuff. And, like, soaring unknowingly, carrying something that has some bit of information, and then there's these goons that are, like, after him. Nobody believes him when he tells the cops or tells the FBI. Yeah. FBI says, well, you need to call the CIA. He bugs the crap out of the CIA, and finally somebody, you know, kind of halfway listens to him or whatever.
Again, it's weird how these movies kind of overlap with each other thematically. Like, if you laid them on top of each other, they would kind of echo each other. And so that's interesting that they're both made by Universal, a year apart, and they really have a lot of thematic overlap. But it's
almost like the same type of movie, but for two different audiences.
Yes, yes, like two different age groups.
Yeah,
like we got to get some nudity in here and some debauchery,
and we're gonna have some sort of game. Like, how is this person gonna know to get away from these people? How is he going to get some special skill? So he's going to play this assassin game with paintball guns, you know?
Yeah. So, and basically towards the end of the movie, we're not trying to recap the movie. We got to tell you about some of the weirdness of the film. The movie kind of wraps up because the movie opens with him playing paintball on the college campus. It ends up with him back on the college campus being chased by the thugs. And he's a veterinarian student. He's in the vet school, and they have a tiger there that they're basically studying. And the teacher was saying, okay, to tranquilize the tiger, we use a dart gun, basically, like an actual paintball gun that shoots like drug darts.
Mm-hmm.
So Jonathan Moore basically steals the dart gun and uses it to play a game of gotcha against these Russian spies, basically, with the dart gun. And I think he like murders like three of them because he shoots like two of them in the heart, and like one of them like falls off on like a high ledge.
Yeah, I guess he kills them.
He kills.
You just kind of assume that he's knocking them out, though, because that's what happens.
One of them falls from like three stories and lands on their back on concrete. That guy's dead.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, and like, I mean,
it just wasn't bloody and gory. It just kind of fell.
And I think I had a point. This is tiger sedative. So he's shooting tiger sedative at people. Tigers are huge.
They're just, I mean, they're 200 pounds, you know, the same as a person.
Okay. Morally weird thing. In the beginning of the movie,
are you trying to say they have tiger blood?
I'm saying they don't, and they're probably dead now because of it. Another little echo back to the beginning of the film is Jonathan Moore asks this girl out, and she's like, "No, I don't want to go out with you, paintball playing dork."
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, he sees her again, and he's like, "Hey, how's it going?" Even though he's got this new like spy girlfriend, he's like, "Hey, how's it going?" And the same girl tells him off again. He's like, "Oh, I'll show you," and he shoots her in the butt with one of these tranquilizer darts, and that's how the movie ends. Like that's his triumph moment is drugging this girl.
But I thought it was great though that the last guy that was like really after him in the movie, before he left to go on summer vacation, was the guy that caused distraction enough so that Anthony Edwards could pick up the gun and shoot the last bad guy with the last like dart he had.
Yeah, like the guy, some kids still playing the gotcha game and sees Anthony Edwards. He pulls out his paintball gun. The Russian guy gets confused by the paintball gun.
Right.
Goes to shoot him, and Anthony Edwards gets to grab his dart gun and shoot the bad guy and save the day.
Right.
A little action movie-like moment.
But back to your point about the last final, you know, scene. That sort of thing can happen today where somebody gets shot with a paintball gun. I mean, those things freaking hurt. They leave, like, bruises.
Well, I just want to
break skin.
I just want to point out that he drugged some random girl who rejected him.
No, he didn't drug her. He shot her with... that's right.
No, he shot her with the dart gun.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That is some Bill Cosby nonsense right there. what did you think of Gotcha?
I mean, I really liked it. I enjoyed it. You may not have enjoyed it as much as I did. I liked it because I thought it was, you know, it's relatable as a college, like as an adult, to see, you know, Anthony Edwards just has this sort of innocent sort of look about him.
Yes.
And you can kind of definitely see him playing this role. I think he's a really kind of underplayed actor. And I really, I mean, I thought some of the scenes were really sort of funny. I mean, him asking out the girl and him telling her off. I mean, and all the kind of scenes that they're in. And I thought that that Linda
Fiorentino.
Thank you. I'm bad at names.
I could be saying it wrong, so don't.
I thought she was awesome. Well, I thought that those two matched together in a movie really, really did well. And the fact that they shot it in real, you know, scenes in Paris and they couldn't really shoot in East Germany. But
I kind of figured it was probably shot in some Eastern European country, but maybe Prague.
No, it was the wall they built just right next to the real wall.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, it was like a replica. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So my problem with this movie is really similar to your problem with the Cloak and Dagger. I felt like, again, it starts pretty well, it ends pretty well. The middle, like the actual chase part of the movie, is a little saggy to me when it comes to gotcha. Like I found myself kind of drifting during like the chase part of the movie in the middle.
Yeah, like you don't really figure out, okay, does he have it? There's like a strudel involved. There's a girl getting shot that he has to, like, that he's supposed to meet, and she's getting shot and falls, you know, towards him. And he's like, what the heck is going on? And then he has to figure out how to get out of the country. So, yeah, so that middle part. And then there's that whole, like, getting in and out of the gate of, like, East Germany and West Germany. And it's really sort of confusing because it's not consistent over how he gets in and how he leaves.
Yeah.
And then we're also to assume that once he gets into the DDR, he can just leave to go back to the U.S., like, just with no problem.
Yeah, like, it's okay, actually, you were in communist Germany for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
It's actually, there's actually more checks, you know, in security for when you board a plane and get back to the U.S. and go through customs if you came from East Germany.
Yeah, that's true. And it's a movie, so you gotta let some of that go. But, I mean, I think that both these movies are interesting. I don't think either of them are essential.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think if either of these movies sounds appealing to you, or you haven't seen them and they sound kind of fun to you, if you're into spy stuff, maybe you'll enjoy them. But I don't feel like they're anything you have to see.
Yeah.
Just kind of bring it to more towards a conclusion.
Yeah. I mean, they're amusing, and I think that they're a reason that we don't hear a lot of people talk about them. I mean, I think that Cloak and Dagger, a lot of people have nostalgia about that movie. And,
well, it's a great title, which is that's why it's been used a lot, and it has the Atari connection, and that's always going to give it some juice. But I mean, really, they're both on the same level of kind of they're not bad, but they're not really great either. They're just, sometimes movies are just okay.
Yeah, they're just amusing. I mean, I give them a pass.
Yeah,
I give them that. I'm not going to turn them off.
Yeah,
you know,
they're not 18 again.
No, they're not. But you know, and they're not. They're not anything. Definitely like 5-star or 4-star, you know, whatever. Yeah. I would call them like average or, you know, that sort of thing, especially for the time period and even for modern day. I mean, comparison to today. To me, I think it's interesting. Gotcha is interesting to me because even though you say, oh, it's kind of dated, like in one way where it's like, oh, you have this East Germany, you have this DDR, you have like this film involved. And even in Cloak and Dagger, you have this, like, game cartridge involved. That, to me, is more, like, telling of the time period that the movies were made in.
Yes. They're very much of their time.
Right. Yeah. So, to the facts, or the interesting facts about Cloak and Dagger, like I said before, the movie's plot about an Atari video game called Cloak and Dagger, made for the Atari 5200. The arcade version is in the movie. It was started but never completed. The game was under development using the title Agent X when the movie producers and Atari learned of each other's projects. So it was supposed to have this like video game tie-in, kind of like Tron and The Last Starfighter. The director wanted to do a thriller for kids. The project started as a remake of Bobby Driscoll's Suspender, The Window.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
based on The Boy Who Cried Murder.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
Yeah. And it kind of morphed into the plot for Cloak and Dagger. It was originally released in a double feature with The Last Starfighter in like July of 1984. But that was like, it was released for like 2 weeks for this like double feature. And then they put it back and then they had its full release was like in August.
Yeah. There's one thing I'd like to mention that I told you about earlier. That Cloak and Dagger was written by a man named Tom Holland, who mm-hmm. went on to have a pretty good career. He wrote and directed the 80s horror comedy classic Fright Night, which is a really well-beloved movie amongst horror fans. He also wrote and directed the first Child's Play movie. Maybe the sequels, I'm not a big Child's Play fan, but I know he definitely did the first film. Mm-hmm. So he had a pretty good career as a horror filmmaker after this. So he wrote a kid's movie, and then mm-hmm. he went on to make horror films, interestingly enough.
Well, that's very interesting. Well, the plans that were revealed in the video game were, in fact, for, like I mentioned before, for the SR-71 Blackbird. There was still, even though that people knew of the Blackbird existed, they didn't really know a whole lot about it. They didn't know how fast, they didn't know its capabilities and all these other kind of things. It was this very sort of secretive project, even back then in like the early 80s or whatever. So it was very plausible that, these plans, for the SR-71, because if Russia were to get these plans that they can make their own, or they could figure out like the weaknesses of the SR-71 or whatever. So this movie has some weird Psycho tie-ins. Mm-hmm. The elderly couple in the film are an actual like married couple.
Oh, really?
Yeah. John McIntyre and Jeanette Nolan, they both had parts in the original Psycho.
Huh.
And in 1960, Richard Franklin, who directed Cloak and Dagger, directed the sequel, Psycho 2.
Interesting.
And Henry Thomas, he plays Norman Bates, a young Norman Bates, in Psycho 4.
Huh.
So, I mean...
Yeah, it's a lot of little weird connections.
I mean, I know that this is supposed to be kind of a Shakespearean, sort of, or Hitchcock, not Shakespeare, Hitchcock, what's Shakespeare? The Hitchcock type of, movie.
Yeah, Hitchcockian,
Hitchcock. Henry Thomas was nominated for the Young Artist Award for Best Actor. If you don't know what the Young Artist Association is, it's a nonprofit organization founded in 1978 to honor excellence of youth performers. So Henry Thomas was nominated. Do you know who won for the Young Artist Award in 1984?
Well, as a film journalist, I do know a lot of random movie trivia. I have to work in that I'm a film journalist in every episode now. That's in my contract. Yeah. But I can't say that I don't know who won.
Anthony Michael Hall for 16 Candles. Excuse me.
Yeah.
The film for Cloak and Dagger was released in 1984 during the Los Angeles Olympics. Universal felt that the target audience of younger children would not be as interested in the Olympics, and the film would have less competition. It grossed $9.7 million, and, $2.8 million came from opening weekend.
Which I guess, would that make it a hit at the time?
I don't know what its budget was. A lot of time during this, they didn't really release how much the budgets were.
It seems like a lot in $1984, I suppose.
But yeah, 9.7.
Yeah.
And it has a 64% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
People generally like it. I mean, it's not bad by any means. It's just, it's not outstanding. It's not, it's competent. That's the word I would use. It's a competent film.
Yeah. And really, 64%, that's above 50%, sort of average.
Yeah, yeah.
But some reviewer on Rotten Tomatoes, or actually from, that they use, TV Guide, says, a film with much to recommend it, Cloak and Dagger feels like a Hitchcock movie produced by Walt Disney.
That's a good description. It makes the movie sound better than it is, but
I thought that was very sort of appropriate. It really does. I mean, it's kind of like, this kid, but kind of like a Disney produced, kind of thing almost.
Yeah.
It's because it's very sort of, like I said, it's very sort of PG.
Yeah.
Moving on to Gotcha. The main theme song in Gotcha was by the British singer Theresa Bazaar.
And she says Gotcha like 800 times in the song.
it was specifically recorded for the film. However, the single did not chart.
I'm not surprised.
There is Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Two Tribes, and Relax are both in the movie, but they are not on the soundtrack.
Hmm.
That's a shame.
I do remember hearing both those and thinking, well, those must have been expensive to clear at the time.
I know, especially
in 1985. In 1985, when those songs were big.
I know, especially Relax. I mean, that's big.
Yeah, they probably couldn't afford to put it on the soundtrack, is what it was.
Yeah. This game also, to Cloak and Dagger, was they made into a Nintendo game. There's a lot of movies in the 80s were. So it had a Nintendo NES tie-in with the zapper gun.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha the Sport, it's called.
I remember.
Yeah. It was all filmed on location except for East Berlin. A exact replica wall, like I said, was built. The passports that they used in the film were the real actual actor's passports.
That's
so
cool.
If you look close in the movie, if you have the DVD, you can pause it. And it's actually, you'll see, it's Anthony Edwards. You'll see, his part of his name, his actual passport.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And in the scene where Jonathan Moore says to Sasha, in the restaurant scene where they meet, Jonathan says at first, she asks his age, and he says he's 23. Weird part about that is at the time that the movie was made, Anthony Edwards really was 23.
Hmm.
Yeah.
He looks 23. He does not look 18.
Yeah, it's in real life, he was 23. As far as reviews or how it was received, Roger Ebert gave it 2 stars.
Out of 4?
Yeah. Saying a well-directed cat-and-mouse game that lost its way in the final act returning to the USA, with the film's main flaw being a focus on Edward's character when Fiorentino was far more intriguing.
Yes, that's fair.
And he goes on to say, I bet the men who made this movie just assumed that it had to be told from his point of view and never considered hers.
That's a very progressive thought for 1985. Yeah.
Too bad. I think they missed their best chance.
Yeah, it's very progressive for 1985. I think Ebert was right.
I know, because, the last time we see her, she's captured by the Germans, and they never get the film, but we never get to see how she escapes and gets back. Next time you see her, it's in the CIA office wearing a suit.
Yeah, she's missing from a good 20 minutes of the movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just not there suddenly. And
right.
But yeah, so I think Ebert's spot on there. Yeah.
Right. I do like the fact that they did, even though that she's from, Pennsylvania or whatever, and he winds up kind of with her at the end, right?
Yes.
Even though that she kind of betrayed him. I mean, I like that part about the whole movie as well. So, but it only has a 36% rating on Rotten Tomatoes,
which is weird. I don't think it's any better or worse than Cloak and Dagger. So that's interesting. I don't know. I think maybe Cloak and Dagger is benefiting from nostalgia, possibly.
A lot of people talk about it. I mean, didn't you say that you saw somebody tweet about it recently?
It was director of Star Wars: The Last Jedi, Rian Johnson, was tweeting about Cloak and Dagger last week, randomly enough, as we were prepping this episode.
So that tells you, if you want to know how soon we record these, that'll give you an idea.
If you want to go back and track this down, if you want to go through Rian Johnson's tweets and tell him how much you liked or hated The Last Jedi, because at this moment, that's still kind of a hot topic, not to make us too dated. But anyway, to kind of wrap it up. So, like I said, not great films, but worth watching.
Right.
Now let's see. Recommendations for films that would go well with these movies.
Yeah, what would you recommend, Video Guru Guy?
Well, they're going to be kind of obvious. I'm going to say them, and you're going to think, of course, because you already mentioned one of them. The Last Starfighter.
Works
so well with this, because, it's about a kid who plays a game, becomes real.
Right.
And the other one is, I know a movie that's very near and dear to your heart, War Games. Which also stars Dabney Coleman.
Which was made 1 year. So, 1984, Dabney Coleman did this movie. 1985, we talked about Gotcha, but War Games is from 1985.
Now, I will say Last Starfighter and War Games are both better movies than these two.
Oh, for sure.
But thematically, they're all basically cinematic cousins. As far as themes and concepts.
Yeah, because in War Games, that's what it's all about, right? It's all about this game. He, goes into this network, and he thinks he's playing a game, and it's for real.
Yeah, but we'll save that for another day, because I know you love War Games, but it's basically the idea that these games suddenly become real. Or
they seem real. If you've seen the movie, everybody should have seen the movie by now. Everybody should know about War Games.
So basically, if you're frozen,
so no, that was 83. I apologize. It was before. Yeah. So Dabney Coleman was in War Games than he was in Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah, I just want to point out, if you were frozen, if you were in a block of ice for the past 20 years, we were just ruining all your movie choices, man. So, you know, if you haven't seen a movie in 30 years, we're just spoiling everything for you. So forgive us, Iceman, you know.
If you've been living under a rock and don't know about War Games, sorry. But yeah, I see. Yeah, I can see your point. I can see that those two movies definitely would be better in, like, choices. So, but it was fun to go back and watch again.
I don't regret watching either one. I just can't say I'll ever watch either of them again anytime soon, and I'd be hesitant to recommend them to someone unless they were really into spy games or the idea of two Dabney Coleman's.
so like thumbs to the side, we'll say.
Thumbs to the side. Well, we're going to rate that at a eh.
All right. Well, we would love to know your thoughts about what you thought of Cloak and Dagger and Gotcha, whether you loved it, hated it. We're also kind of thumbs to the side. Email us, tweet at us, leave a comment. We would love to hear from you. And thank you all very much for listening to the show, Video Culture. And also, please send us your suggestions. So if you have another two movies that you think would go great together, we would also love to hear from you.
Yeah, please let us know, guys.
All right, well, that wraps it up. You guys have a great one.
I'm Matthew Estrie.
And I'm Ryan Acree.
Go watch some movies, guys.
I was just wondering if you're doing anything Saturday night.
No, I don't think so.
Would you like to go out with me?
No.
Jonathan Moore is a young man with a problem. He goes to Paris on vacation.
Voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir?
He meets a mysterious woman in an even more mysterious line of work.
What are you, a spy?
Yes, I am a spy.
He follows her to Berlin.
Halt!
Now the CIA is after him. The Russians are trying to kill him. He's having the vacation of a lifetime.
Gotcha! Gotcha!
Gotcha.
Rated PG-13.
Starts Friday at select theaters.